that appear in this instruction from Yahweh, Devar, Yahweh, and there's two more, Barak and Shamar, that provide a comprehensive summary of the Torah. So we've reached Barak.
Mm-hmm.
What is it? Is it adding something to this? Is it reinforcing it? Is it what does Barak add that we haven't already come to know?
Well, it tells you a little more specifically what he's, besides just kneeling down to lift us up, he's also offering to favor us, to give us a great gift, if you would.
Who is he lifting up? What's the first letter in Barak?
He's the family. Family.
Yeah, he's lifting up the family. He's not lifting up everyone, is he?
No, he's lifting up the people that are engaged with him.
Right. Yeah, the first letter is the V. Yeah, right. That's what the Shamar thing is being telling us at the end. If we're not part of his family, he doesn't know us, not paying any attention to us.
Mm-hmm.
We are unknown to him. He's not engaged. He's not listening to your prayer. He's not answering your prayer. You have never talked to him. He's never listened to you. He's never responded to you. He doesn't even know who you are and doesn't want to know who you are. If you're
that would
not
be
part
cruel
of his
for him.
Oh, it'd be cruel. Absolutely.
You go nuts if you're worried about everything. If people walk away from you and leave you, just fine. I'm sorry to see you go, but
you know, what if you had to love everybody and listen to everybody, would you want to listen to Hadrian as he wants to rename your Jerusalem,
you know,
the source from which teaching regarding reconciliation is flowing? He wants to name it after himself.
No, I have to slug him.
Would you want to listen to him when he devotes his religion to building a statue of himself and a shrine to himself where the temple was, where your home was?
No. Couldn't take it.
Couldn't take it. What if you had to listen to Paul or Muhammad?
Well, that's a red question in Paul a couple of times now. It kind of makes me sick to read it. I know it's valuable.
Oh, no, it makes me sick to read it.
But it's sickening to read.
Right.
It's absolutely sickening.
Yeah. Agreed. And I think that's, by the way, why he had Chabaouk embrace this, depict what Paul said. The actual summation of Paul's letters is provided by Chabaouk. Chabaouk was forced to read it.
Yeah, he got
forced to read it. But Chabaouk read it and reported on it because I don't think Yahweh wanted anything to do with it.
Yeah.
Yahweh condemns him. Big time, but it's Chabaouk that read it and reports on it. Yeah, I know. It's like I wish I had known you, Kirk, when I was doing my writing Prophet of Doom. I'd say, why don't you go read the Quran and have Ethan write the report on it? I'll
come back
under my name.
I can write a book report on this. It ain't a book.
Right. Yeah, so in Barak, it tells you who Yahweh is loving, who he's getting down on his knees to lift up, and it's his family and his home. And then we have the individuals that he is lifting up and blessing, further defined by the Rosh.
Mm-hmm. And those obviously are the ones, pardon me, the ones that are engaged in Shamar and paying attention to him, paying attention to what he's saying, what he wants.
Yeah. Why don't you say, how many times in the Debar and now in Barak, do we see an observant individual, and do we see Yahweh's family and home?
It seems to be quite frequent.
Yeah, quite frequent.
To say the least.
Mm-hmm. Right, and then the K in Barak, the Ko.
The K, the Kof is that's open hand greeting.
Welcoming.
It's not a fist; it's a welcoming thing.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly,
right.
It's a grab hold to somebody with that. Yeah.
Yeah. I picked my wife up at the airport last night. I did not greet her with a closed fist.
Well, that's very good.
You know, it's
it saves your life, didn't it?
Right. Yes. Yeah. You know, if you're going to give someone a gift, you do so with a an open hand.
Open hand.
Yeah.
Friendly greeting.
It's
a loving greeting.
A friendly, welcoming greeting, and it's how you offer a gift. That is Barak. And then so the last word of the four that you wanted to share was probably Shamar.
Shamar. And, of course, that starts out with the shin.
Mm-hmm.
Nourishing
words.
Words, of course, in language. The mem followed by the mem, which is life, water, cleansing.
Mm-hmm.
And once again, our friend DeRoche, with the head that's engaged in the senses, the thinking, observing.
The word of Yahweh provides cleansing and life to those who are observant.
Yeah.
That's what Shamar means.
Uh-huh.
So how in the world do you get from there to keep, as the King James did?
You can only do it if you just want a lot of people. I mean, really, it's really that cut and dry. These are not clerical arrows.
Yeah. What this says by Yahweh doing this in this place is he's saying that he's going to lift up and he's going to love and he's going to provide benefit to, getting down on his knees to assist those who pay attention to what he is, what he wants and what he's
right.
offering.
Right.
That's what it says. That's a very powerful perspective. If you don't care enough to come to know Yahweh as he introduced himself in his Torah, you aren't interested enough to devote the time to understand what he wants and what he's offering and how to engage in a relationship with him, then he's not going to engage. Well, he's actually going to reciprocate. If you don't care enough to do those things, he doesn't care enough to get to know you. And if you do care enough to do those things, he cares enough to reciprocate and get to know you. The ultimate quid pro quo.
All right. And his offer, his gift is so great. I mean, if you also happen to know the Abraham story, when he shows him he's going to be light, it's exponential to the nth degree of
right.
what he's offering you. This is not just a nice gift that I'm going to take care of you and you can come live in a house, you know. Or live
the
in
transition
garage.
From one dimension to two is infinite.
Mm-hmm.
The transition from two to three is infinite.
Mm-hmm.
We are now three stuck in time.
Mm-hmm.
So we're like 3.1 dimensions.
Okay.
When we're immortal and transitioned into light, we will be fully four-dimensional. But Yahweh's construct is clearly seven-dimensional.
Yeah.
And so we are going to be infinitely increased when we become immortal through being spirit. And then there are three additional dimensions that will be added to us. It's just it's mind-boggling as to how much greater we're going to be and how all the limitations that are part of being material and flesh go away. And yet we know with Yosha that we will be able to transition back to being material when it serves our interests.
Now, that's the ultimate in freedom, isn't it? Being released from misery. I mean, this is total freedom, free will.
Yeah, empowerment,
I mean,
enlightenment.
Where do you get Lord?
Yeah, and that's why I'm an extreme, I have an extreme perspective on this. I think that extreme perspective is the only possible conclusion you can draw. But my view is that the Torah is not constraining in any way, that the Torah is wholly and completely liberating. It's not just enlightening, it is liberating. And this idea of no longer being constrained by a physical body and becoming a spiritual entity, but yet being able to choose to be material again when I want to sing a song, when I want to feel a warmth on my skin, when I want to enjoy a good wine, when I want to be part of a group in front of a bonfire, you know, that whole feeling and smell and sound. You know, there's sometimes you might want to be stuck in time
mm-hmm.
and be okay.
Sure.
And so I view everything in the Torah is ultimately liberating, freeing.
Yeah.
It doesn't keep me from doing anything. It enables me to do everything.
That's a much better perspective. I think the correct one. I can't come to a different conclusion than that either.
I can't either. And that's part of what I think this idea that the two people depicted in Yahweh's name are adults is that we still have free will. We are able to do so much more than we ever could have possibly imagined. We're not children that Yahweh has to watch over every minute. We're adults. We're individuals, and Yahweh wants us to relate to Him as an individual. It's ultimately uplifting, liberating, empowering, enlightening. Everything that I want.
Well, I'm sure you didn't mind watching over your children when they were children, but gosh, now they're all grown up, and you can actually see them when you want to see them. They can see you when you want, when they want to see you, and y'all can party when you want to.
I've gone through that process with Yahweh.
It's a wonderful life. Yeah.
Yeah, I went through that process with Yahweh as a child that had nothing to contribute, that was totally dependent. I've gone through that process. And now, in terms of sharing insights, sharing, you know, going on voyages of discovery through his words, having conversations with him, you know, now we're individuals in this relationship together. I enjoyed the process of growing up. I'm sure he enjoyed it too, just as I did with my own children. But we're not stuck there with Yahweh. We grow.
Yeah.
You know, I think that's the reason, by the way, that the covenant exists. You can't grow without relationships. If you're God and you have everything that you can imagine, every possession, ultimate power and influence, you can't be infinite by the definition of infinite in any way unless you grow. That which doesn't grow dies. The only way for God to grow is through relationships with his children, particularly as they grow up and become adults and can contribute to that relationship. I've grown through family.
And he's getting quite a lot out of it, too. I mean, he didn't do this because he wanted it to be one-sided. He gets a great joy out of growing and discovery, too.
Yeah, there's a greater joy in celebrating an accomplishment of your son or daughter or your spouse than there is in doing it yourself. I am much happier for my children's achievements than I ever was for any of mine. I'm sure God's exactly the same way. That's how we grow. That's the joy in life. All right, so the next sentence begins, Yahweh. Again, doesn't say the Lord. It says Yahweh. If you don't know his name, you do not know him. Yahweh. He has chosen to always shine the light of his presence upon you. Now, once again, we're hugely divergent from the King James. The King James says, the Lord has made his face shine upon thee.
Yeah.
Well, there is an aspect of shine here, but the Hebrew word is based on or.
Or.
Or means light. Yahweh has identified himself in the Torah as being light. Disassociation that we find in the King James with light, when it's his light. So this is Yahweh's light. And we talk about a face shining. You know, we think of, happy, smiling, make his face shine, you know. You've got it, you're happy, a shining, happy face. That's not what's being conveyed here. What's being conveyed here is the very thing you mentioned, Kirk, earlier. When Abraham told Yahweh, he says, listen, I don't get it. You keep on talking about this covenant and my inheritance, and I don't have a kid. So what good is an inheritance to an old guy without a kid? I don't get it. And he took him to where?
He took him up to the stars and showed him what light was and explained it that way. And he did.
Right. And he got it. In fact, immediately thereon, Yahweh said that he credited Sadak, vindication, to him as he came to realize this is what is actually occurring. And Yahweh, when he talks about creating the universe, doesn't he not only say that light is the first thing that that he conceived, let there be light, but didn't he write it in such a way that he equated himself to light?
Yeah, that's about the only metaphor we can use to really grasp it, you know, with our little mental frames that we have. But that's certainly we can certainly see it that way, eternal.
Yeah. Yeah, I was constantly telling us the light came into the world. When he comes into the world, he's light.
Right.
Yeah, the closest thing that we have to understand the Spirit of God and what we're going to be like in eternity is light. Now, what's interesting, of course, is that the ancient Hebrews, as they heard this, they would have struggled because they would not have understood what it means to be light. I mean, they understand light illuminates things so I can see, that light warms me when it comes from a fire, mm-hmm. that light provides energy to cook my food so that it's healthier and more nourishing.
Right.
That helps, a fire will help me refine, in a crucible to separate that which is, dross from that which is desirable and valuable. Mm-hmm. I mean, they would have understood there's a lot of aspects. The fire keeps my family warm. It keeps the beasties away. It cooks my food. You know, it provides light at night, and they would have understood a lot of stuff. And they would know that the energy of the sun is really making it possible for things to grow. That if they planted a seed where the sun could not shine, that it wouldn't grow. And if they planted it in the sunlight, that it would grow.
Right.
Would have known a lot of things. But they would not have understood relativity, would they?
Not at all.
No. And on a photon of light, what's the nature of time?
Well, it stands still. You're observing the beginning and the end, for that matter.
Yeah. You know, and while the notion of stand still is partially accurate, it's really that all time exists simultaneously on a photon
of
light.
Okay, so it's observable. It's observable from one point, I guess.
Yeah, observable from one point. You can see the past, the present, the future. Time, you're not stuck in time anymore. You're photon of light, you're liberated in time.
Right.
And it also, when Einstein came up with, Einstein came up with two theories, both of which have been proven to be true. They're no longer theories. He not only said that time is relative, that it flows differently depending on your perspective. And in this case, on a photon of light, time exists for all eternity. You're not stuck in it. You're liberated in it. But he also gave us the equation to equate the difference between light, which is energy, E, and matter. And energy and matter, E equals mc squared, means that energy equals matter, but not the same amount of matter.
Mm-hmm.
Matter is a hugely reduced form of energy. That's why matter has to be multiplied by the square of the speed of light to be equivalent to energy.
Mm-hmm.
So they're the same thing, just not the same amount of the same thing. It's like having a diamond ring or a mountain of diamonds.
Right.
Same thing, just not the same amount. Now,
I'm sorry, go ahead.
So that tells you about the empowerment that we're going to have when we become spirit, how much better it is to be spirit, right?
Mm-hmm.
It tells us how we become immortal when we become spirit. Explains that too, doesn't it? So it explains the empowerment and explains becoming immortal. It also explains how Yosha could transition between the two because they're the same thing. They're just different amounts of the same thing.
Mm-hmm. Starts to explain it, set apart.
Yeah. And it also explains set apart. What it means for Yosha to be set apart from Yahweh. Part of him, spirit, and then transformed, diminished into matter. That's why he said the Father is greater than I. They're the same substance, just hugely diminished version. So a diminished manifestation of Yahweh. We can learn so much more and understand so much more today. So when Yahweh focuses on us, when he gets down on his knees to lift us up in love, what he's saying is that he has chosen to have his light always shine upon us. And it's the light of his presence, pene in Hebrew means presence. It speaks of the very nature of his being. So,
and if the light shines on you, I'm sorry.
Yeah, go ahead, finish your thought.
No, I was just going to say, if the light shines on you, there's no darkness there, so all the evil goes away.
That's how salvation occurs.
Mm-hmm.
That's how
right.
We become perfect. That's why Yahweh on Matzah, as well as on three other of his Moed Mikre invitations to be called out and meet with him, invites us and encourages us to walk into the presence of his maternal light. The set-apart spirit, because when we walk into the presence of the light, I don't know about you, but I can speak for me, and I don't want to impugn you, but I've got some dark crevices here and there. I am a flawed dude. And, you know, when there is light, darkness disappears. Light and darkness are not the opposite. Darkness is the absence of light. With light, there is no darkness. And so when Yahweh surrounds us in his light, all the darkness goes away. It doesn't become invisible. It's not hidden.
It's gone.
It's obliterated. It no longer exists. And that's how he makes us look perfect in his eyes. So that is part of the salvation process. But you and I think, I know I can speak for me in this regard.
Sure.
Salvation used to be a big deal to me when I was a Christian. It's right there at the edge of meaningless to me now.
Mm-hmm.
But that really, I'm sure for somebody listening to this, still focused on you know, how are you saved?
Yeah.
That might sound like it's craziness, but do you also share that, where thoughts about salvation, appreciation for being saved, is a distant attribute or benefit of the covenant? It doesn't make my top 10 list.
No, and I think a lot of what happened to me was also in the studies on Dode, you know, knowing how flawed he was and how he explains how to view this.
Right.
You know, and so that is irrelevant to God. He tells you what to do. Do the things that builds the relationship. Do those things with Yahweh, and these other things are, he can handle those.
Yeah.
I mean, you're going to make mistakes, so what? I mean,
right. So long as you're observant, so long as you listen to him, so long as you come to know him and you like him and you come to understand those terms and conditions of the covenant and you act upon them, then everything else is, in terms of the benefits of the covenant, are God's responsibilities.
Yeah.
Salvation is being perfected, is one of the benefits of the covenant. It's not, it's his responsibility as dad to protect me. It's just a natural outcome of all of this. But I'm not focused on the salvation. I'm focused on the relationship.
Right.
The enjoyment of it.
And that's what he wants.
Yeah, the liberation, the exploration, the enlightenment, the empowerment, all of that kind of stuff is the stuff that trips my triggers, what I focus on, what I care about.
Mm-hmm.
You know, salvation is just kind of the only reason for salvation is that with matzah, I don't have to worry about being flawed.
No.
I don't have to try to be, Johnny Good Shoes, they're too good. I hate that. It's so false, and it's, I don't have to pretend. Just be me and enjoy this relationship.
Right. Certainly Doe did.
Oh, absolutely. He said he had more flaws than hairs on his head.
Yeah.
And I can tell you, he wasn't bald. He did.
Well, I mean, I'm thrilled to know that so many of the people that he works with are so flawed. I mean, even if it's just a speech impediment, I mean, that gives me great courage.
Oh, yeah. He wants to pick the person that's going to introduce who he is, including his name, to his children, and he picks the guy with a speech impediment. Now, can God be upset about the exact proper pronunciation of his name if he picks a guy with a speech impediment to introduce his name to his children?
Well, if he did, he missed the boat, didn't he? But I don't think he missed the boat.
Could Yahweh be trying to tell you that you've got to perfectly do everything, obey everything that the Torah says to be saved, if he picked Dode, who was about the most flawed guy in all of history, to be the person telling us the best way to observe the Torah?
Well, if you could be perfect, I mean, come on, then why is he going through matzah?
Right. You know, Pauline Christianity says that the Torah is impossible to obey because you'd have to be perfect and no one's capable of being perfect, so it condemns you. And Yahweh's perspective on the Torah is that you guys are all imperfect. I'm perfect. I want you to be part of my family, so I wrote my Torah to perfect you.
Yeah, I got a plan for you.
I got a plan. I mean, the Torah doesn't exist for perfect people. It exists to perfect flawed people. Yeah, it's a marvelous realization, and that's part of Yahweh's light. So Yahweh tells us he's light. We've come to understand what light represents, and all of the empowerment, the enrichment, the longevity, the enlightenment, everything that goes along with light. And he's going to have his light shine upon us, the light of his presence. So it's his very being, which is light, that is going to radiate from us as part of this blessing as he lifts us up in love. That's what the covenant's about. That's the benefit. So he has chosen to always shine the light of his presence, Pene, upon us. Pene is an interesting P-N-H.
Mm-hmm.
Mouth, right? Source of words.
Mouth again, and yes, and
none, children with an inheritance.
Language, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And, hey, is that children with an inheritance grows up.
Mm-hmm.
Becomes an engaged individual. Walking, standing in his presence.
Right.
Great word. Another great word.
That's a great word.
Yeah, look at words, don't you? Look at or for light. Ain, which is the eye. I can see, I can perceive. The wa, which is that which enlarges and secures the family. And the rosh.
Then the rosh again. Once again, the engaged... Right.
Observant
individual. Mm-hmm. Observant individual, yes.
And without light, can you observe? If you had no light, would your eyes work?
No.
So isn't light the very substance of observation?
Absolutely.
And here's a word that's written with the ain, which was depicted as an eye. Mm-hmm. Tells you how you're going to be observant too, doesn't it?
Yes, sir. It does indeed.
Yeah. I mean, these words are so beautifully presented on our behalf. And so he has chosen, this is also in the Jusuf, expressing his desire. It's in the imperfect, right. Which means forever.
Ongoing.
Right.
Ongoing. Uh-huh.
So he has chosen to do this for us.
Right.
And transforming. It's the hyphal stem, by the way, too. The hyphal stem is different than the peel. And the hyphal stem, the peel stem causes the object to benefit from the subject's action.
Okay.
And that's a good thing. You know, so all this was written in the peel. We benefit.
Mm-hmm.
In the hyphal, the subject engages the object in such a way that the object becomes a secondary subject. Now, that might sound convoluted until I explain what that means. In the hyphal stem, when Yahweh is shining his light upon us, the light of his presence, he is influencing us in such a way that we become like him. That's what the hyphal means in this case. That his light is being provided to us so that we become like him. It's a powerful concept to leave on the cutting room floor as you're creating a translation, and all you come up with is shine.
Well, let me commend you on your translations, because you, unlike so many, you put all this in there, so the grammar in this case is telling us all the ongoing things, so you understand why you wrote it the way you wrote it,
right.
on something that's just a few words.
Right.
I mean, you can certainly get all that. This is not just you adding words to make it easy in English, which is helpful, of course, but that's what he's saying, and I'm not very good in the grammar at all, but I can look it up, and I can, like most of the things I do, I just look it up and say, yeah, that's what it says. That's exactly how that works, and that's fine.
My worst subject, Dick Kirk, was grammar. English was my worst subject in school. Grammar was where I failed in English. I'm not good at grammar. In this case, I may be an effective spokesperson for this, because like Moshe, that was a stutterer, and he was chosen to convey Yahweh's name.
Mm-hmm.
He was flawed in the area that mattered most. Dode was chosen to explain how to observe the Torah, and he was the least perfect, obedient person in the world.
Mm-hmm.
Well, my worst subject is grammar.
Mm-hmm.
So,
in Europe, all your time with language, right?
Therefore,
good move.
Yeah, you always want to be really careful when you're talking about why you might be chosen for something or you're doing something with Yahweh. Is the always picks the somebody who is really flawed and dented in that particular area.
That exposed you, didn't it?
It really does. That exposes you. So, and that's, by the way, it's very comforting to know that.
Now, yeah.
It actually is. It's very comforting. I am very happy to admit that that grammar is my worst subject. Now, I'm going to tell you that from my perspective, the Hebrew mood, stems, and conjugations are not about grammar. The stems are about relationship.
Uh-huh.
The moods are about free will. The conjugations are about time. I don't see any of those things as being grammar. And I think if you look at the Hebrew stems, simply creating a relationship between the subject and the object, in this case, it's the subject influencing the object in such a way that the object, us, becomes like the subject, God. I don't think there's any part of that that's grammar. That's a relational concept. Just as imperfect means ongoing forever. The last concept of the second sentence, Kirk, is also quite powerful. It's not only that Yahweh is going to transform us with light and recognize that it is the hifl stem that says that he's going to make us like him. It's the imperfect conjugation that says this is going to be our eternal state. And it's the juice of mood that says that this is what he wants. It's his will. It's what he's chosen to do. But the second aspect of it moves from or light and his panay presence to chanan.
Mm-hmm.
Chanan is used twice as much in the Hebrew Torah, prophets, and Psalms than is the Christian Pauline concept of charis grace.
Grace, yeah.
Chanan means mercy, doesn't it?
Mercy, yes, indeed.
He wants to be merciful. Yahweh actually introduced us to the word mercy in the second instruction, the etched in stone. Most Christians don't know the second instruction for anything more than don't make a graven image. Do you know that the Roman Catholic Church, because of all their graven images, you know, the crucifixes and statues to Mary, all their statues to former popes and everything else, do you know that they took it out of the 10, and because everybody knew there were 10, they took the one about coveting, and they divided it into two? They simply took the tablet and said, oh, we're going to erase number two, because it's too obvious that...
Yeah, we'd have to get rid of all these statues.
Number two.
We spent a lot of money on these statues, boys.
So, yeah, when you've got an obelisk in the middle of your courtyard, and next to your papal palace, with all the Greek gods on it, yeah, you got a problem with the graven image. Whenever one of your cathedrals has a crucifix at the front of it, which is a graven image, and has a statue of Mary, which is a graven image in the front of it. So, yeah, they were... As they took it out. But the second instruction that Yahweh etched in stone has very little to do with the graven images. It does say, you know, don't create them and don't hang around them. But what it really says is don't be religious.
No.
And it goes on to explain, don't be religious, and it's by being religious that fathers corrupt their sons to the third and fourth generation.
Yeah.
But then the concept of Chanan is presented next. Etched in stone. I bet you there's not one Christian in a million that knows the second instruction explains not only how many will benefit from Yahweh's Chanan, mercy, but also how they will benefit from Yahweh's Chanan, mercy.
Because
you know how the second instruction ends? It says that he will be merciful. Well, after telling us that fathers corrupt their children to the third and fourth generation by being religious. Yahweh says, and I will be merciful to thousands who observe the terms and conditions of my covenant. So the means to his mercy is explained, etched in stone. Mm-hmm. And the number of people who will make that choice to observe the terms and conditions of his covenant
is so small.
Yes, thousands, which is thousands amongst billions is one in a million. Wow. That, by the way, tells you that it's impossible for any popular religion to be truthful.
Yeah.
Because in popular religions, you have billions amongst billions,
mm-hmm.
as opposed to thousands amongst billions.
Certainly millions and millions, even in the small ones. I mean,
even in the small ones, but
just
Christianity is probably 2.5 billion, and Islam, 1.5 billion, about a billion on Hinduism, and about 2 billion on socialist, secular, humanism, communism.
It covers a bunch of us, don't it? And most of us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Wow. I mean, Judaism is tiny because there's only 15 million Jews in the world, and 3/4 of Jews are not religious.
Hmm.
So he says he's going to be merciful. And he's told us previously, etched it in stone, because it's in Shemoth names that he presents the 10 statements. Now, he does reiterate the 10 statements in Devarim, each of them, one at a time. But he has already explained to us how to become a recipient of his mercy, which is to shamar, observe the mitzvah, terms and conditions of the covenant.
All right, sir. I'll talk at you tonight.
So here's a God that wants to be here tonight at 4:30 Pacific and 7:30 Eastern. We'll do Yada Yada Radio. But and for those who are listening, Kirk is going to co-host with Scott 2 programs next week while I'm on vacation. May God bless you all.